From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Here we are, Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we're going to be speaking to publisher Mark Cote, Cormorant Publishing. And couldn't be more timely because things are, thanks to Trump, all these topics have a special meaning now, weight, you could say. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer, who has represented accused at international criminal tribunals. And he has won an award, the Victoire Ingabire Award. And we're going to be talking to him later in the show. But I think we're joined now by Mark Cote, the publisher of Cormorant Books. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thank you very much, Mark, for joining us. I really find your position, as I've seen it outlined on the matter of books and promoting Canadian writers, promoting Canadian bookstores, promoting Canadian publishers, couldn't be more timely. Because suddenly a cloud has come over the country, and everybody's talking about this problem of the U.S. You've been on the subject for quite a while, as.
Pretty much my entire adult life.
You have a head start.
I do.
So let's say, well, I want to go over the positions you've been advocating and why we haven't had traction. By the way, I suspect your moment has arrived. I think we're about to get a lot of traction. Canadians would like to read Canadian authors, and they'd like not to be culturally dominated by our little neighbor to the south, but you've been on this. What are the problems facing Canadian publishing and writers and bookstores?
Oh, I thought you only said we had minutes, not hours. the answer does actually require a very lengthy response.
Oh, but please go. We have time.
Putting it simply, we are a very small market. Although Canada has a population at this point of 41 million people, fewer than 30 million are English language speakers and English language readers. And that's a small market anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And we are dominated by the two biggest English language publishers, the UK and the United States. The United States is right next door. And we are the ideal location for American publishers to dump their print overruns and sell them at full price. So what happened in Canada starting in pretty much the 1950s, American publishers were a little more ethical, shall we say, and they made agreements with Canadian-owned companies to sell their books, to sell American books on behalf of American publishers here in Canada. So you had companies like McClelland and Stewart and General Publishing and others, Macmillan, who sold Little Brown or Simon and Schuster or Random House here in Canada on behalf of their American colleagues. And this was a situation that allowed the Canadian publishing industry to create an east-west distribution system, to hire a lot of people, mm-hmm. and eventually to start publishing books of our own so that our authors could publish here in Canada first without having to hope that an American agent or a British publisher would take them on. Up until pretty much the 1950s, most Canadian authors who were published, authors of any significance, Gwethelyn Graham, Hugh McLennan, they were published originally either in London or New York. And starting in the 50s, we started to publish Canadian authors here. Along the way, the Massey Commission into the Arts and Culture is set up and delivers a report that says Canada is really good at having amateur theatricals and amateur music, but we're not so good at creating national institutions of professional artists. So the Massey Commission report said we should have an arts council that would fund artistic production, and it would do so on the basis of artistic excellence. This is how we got the Canada Council. And the Canada Council, for a period of time, paid writers, gave out grants based on peer assessment and excellence of their work. They gave out grants to writers so that they could have time to write, right? Writing takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Problem was, the books were being written, they weren't getting published. So in the late 60s, early 70s, the Canadian government gave more money to the Canada Council specifically to help kickstart the Canadian publishing industry that pretty much got started in 1967 with the establishment of a handful of book publishing companies.
Yes.
McLellan Stewart had been around for a while. It was a beneficiary of these block grants from the Canada Council.
Mm-hmm.
And the publishers were given grants to ensure that these books got published and got some attention. This is right at the moment when Canadian nationalism begins to sweep through, and we had the great good fortune of people like Peter Newman in charge of Maclean's. And the people at Maclean's were encouraged by Peter Newman to see themselves as contributing to Canadian culture by literally boosting it.
Mm.
So we have new authors coming out with books, and Maclean's gets behind them and really promotes them. And we develop the beginning of a literature, we develop the beginning of a publishing industry, and everything starts to go along kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
We need a little bit more funding because it's a big country, it's spread out across a thin border, and the economies of scale aren't there, but it's also made up for the fact that the larger, more established Canadian companies are selling books published in the United States, and they're raking in some money to pay for their publishing programs.
Mm-hmm.
This sails along pretty well until the mid-1990s. At the point when Sheila Copps becomes Minister of Culture and Michael Wernick becomes her Assistant Deputy Minister, or Deputy Minister, I forget which he was.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide to make mincemeat out of Canadian cultural policy. And they did this in a number of ways. First way was when Avi Bennett, who by this point owned McLellan and Stewart, decided he wanted out. There was no easy way for him out except to sell to Random House. Black letter law, you're not allowed to sell Canadian cultural institutions to foreign-owned buyers.
Hmm.
But Sheila Copps gave Avi Bennett permission to do so, and Michael Wernick did too. And they orchestrated a deal whereby Avi donated 75% of the shares to the University of Toronto, and Random House bought 25% of the shares. But the interesting thing was, Random House had full control of the company. Random House had the bank accounts,
wow.
Random House received the grants, and Random House provided all the administration, the distribution, publishing functions, and most importantly, the board of directors. So University of Toronto Press held these shares in name only. They had no control. The truth was the company had been sold to Random House. And that continued for 14 years. And over that 14 years, something like $70 million of public funds went into a foreign-owned company.
Oh, boy.
Again, against the law. Sheila Copps called this a made-in-Canada deal.
Yeah, the deal was made in Canada.
Because the deal was made in Canada, right. Along the way, Susan Stoddart, who ran a company called Distacan, which was the distribution arm in Canada for Simon & Schuster, Susan Stoddart decided she wanted out of the business. So again, Michael Wernick and Sheila Copps said, go ahead, sell the distribution arm to Simon & Schuster. You're not allowed to, but we're giving you special permission to.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time as all of this is happening, Random House, which used to have a distribution unit in Canada, pulled its distribution back to the United States. So booksellers here, bookstores across the country, had to order their books from, I don't know if it was New Jersey or Tennessee or somewhere. And when they were ordering their Margaret Atwood or their Michael Ondaatje, the booksellers were told, well, that's very nice, but you've got to order 10 copies of John Grisham or else you don't make your minimum. Hmm. And the reason a bookseller needs to make their minimum is they get a lower discount and they get their freight paid for them. Hmm. So what Random House did was it used the Canadian list from McClellan and Stewart to increase their sales of their own American and foreign authors.
That's a nasty formulation.
Pardon?
I said that's a nasty formulation.
It is indeed, and it doesn't work to Canadians' benefit. Meanwhile, in 1993, the government of Brian Mulroney, and people don't ever think of Brian Mulroney as a cultural nationalist, but his government was. And they set up a very good book publishing program called the Book Publishing Industry Development Program. It had two components. One component was for marketing and one component was for publishing. And together, the two programs had a $50 million budget in 1993. Once the Liberals under Jean Chrétien and Paul Martin came in, that budget was cut back significantly. It was cut back to less than half. In fact, it was cut by 70%. Subsequent governments, be they Liberal or Conservative or Liberal, have barely increased the grants available to Canadian publishers. So publishers in 1994 who were able to get significant sums of money to help them run their companies and publish books well, were suddenly cash-strapped. Then in the late 1990s, early 2000s, was the rise of chapters. And when chapters went up for sale, in order to make their books, their books of record look good, they returned most of their stock. And they returned, in the case of general publishing, general distribution services, they returned an entire year's worth of publishing, which led eventually to the bankruptcy of general publishing and the destabilization of the Canadian publishing industry. When, in 2002, Jack Stoddart went to Sheila Copps and said, I need $5 million bridge funding, she said no.
No to $5 million?
No to $5 million to save the company. So general publishing went under, it went bankrupt, and literally every major Canadian publisher in that warehouse was destabilized. Since then, we've lost Key Porter Books. We almost lost Douglas and McIntyre, which did collapse and then was revived because a great Canadian publisher in Vancouver, Howie White, bought one part of Douglas and McIntyre, and some of the employees, including Rob Sanders, bought up another part of Douglas and McIntyre called Greystone Books, and it has managed to stick around. But the ecosystem for Canadian publishers has been really, really bad because along the way, with the advent of chapters, we lost bookstores. How many bookstores? In the year 1995, the Canadian Booksellers Association had 2,400 members. Today, those are independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. Today, there are about 240 independent bookstores in the country.
In all of Canada?
In all of Canada. Might be more, but it's nowhere near 2,400.
By the way, aren't most of them in Quebec?
And the Canadian Booksellers Association was for English language bookstores only. That wasn't counting the ones in Quebec. So, much of what I'm talking about is English language publishing.
In our country, yes. The rest of Canada. ROC.
Yes, in ROC. So we've lost a lot of independent booksellers, and these were the people who really did champion local authors. and they would take chances. We have fewer of them, fewer opportunities. Along the way, the big multinationals have all pulled back to the U.S. Well, they have branch plants here. They have offices. And yes, they buy up Canadian authors, but it's not their raison d'être. Their raison d'être is to make sure that we buy John Grisham and Stephen King et al. So for a company like mine, Cormorant Books, when we manage to work with our authors and create great books and get attention and nominations for the Scotia, for the Giller Bank, the Giller Prize, mm-hmm. and other awards, Random House comes knocking immediately on those authors' doors and says, well, you know, very nice of Cormorant Books to help you get a good book out of into the market, but we can do better for you. Mm-hmm. And so what Random House does is they buy our authors away from us. We are left with their first book or the one book of theirs we published, and Random House goes on to publish them later on. It makes it hard to grow a company if you keep starting over. Mm-hmm. And the Canadian government has, under Justin Trudeau's Liberals, failed to live up to its promises. They kept promising for 9 years that they were going to increase the budget of the Canada Book Fund, which is what the Book Publishing Industry Development Program has become. And they haven't done so. Not in a meaningful way, I should say. Mm. And so today, the fund for Canadian books, for Canadian book publishers, is about $30 million.
That's $30 million
in the year 2025.
Doesn't sound like much.
It was $50 million in 1995. What does that tell you? And it's worth noting that when people like Justin Trudeau and Mark Carney publish their books, and Jean Chrétien, who do they publish with? Foreign-owned publishers. They don't publish with Canadian publishers.
Now, this is an ugly situation.
Pardon?
I have to interrupt and say, what an ugly situation. By the way, we are speaking to Mark Côté, Cormorant Publishing. Go ahead.
It's an unfortunate situation because you would think that with the rising nationalism, Mark Carney might look at things and call up his agent or whoever it is and say, I can't publish with Random House anymore. I know you call yourselves McClellan and Stewart, but you're Random House, and I can't do that.
Exactly.
But
There are cheering Canadians, by the way, as you speak. I guarantee you.
I'm sorry?
I said there are cheering Canadians as you say these things. People are really quite fed up with this situation.
I like to think so.
Of the uncle who's not smiling at us from across the border.
Right. Well, we've got, and the thing is, Canadian writing is important because these are the people who tell us who we are. And in Canada, we don't have one national myth. We have many, many, many people telling us who we are. We are a country, you know, whatever you think of it, we decided in the 1970s to be a cultural mosaic, to be multicultural, and that is truly reflected in Canadian publishing. The books that Cormorant and other publishers publish are from all regions of the country, from every ethnicity you can imagine. And it were better for it, mm-hmm. because it makes us a stronger country in the end. This is who we are. And every now and then, you know, a company like Cormorant will hit one out of the park. And we did a few years ago with a book called The Marrow Thieves by Cherie DeMoline, which, you know, won the Kirkus Prize in the United States. It was the first Canadian book to do so. And went on to win the Governor General's Literary Awards, was on Canada Reads, and we sold a number of copies. And thank God, that book is now being taught in colleges and universities. Mm-hmm. College and university professors have been very good about bringing Canadian books into the curriculum. But you look at our high school situation. I don't know about you, Phil, but when I was in high school, we did Lord of the Flies and To Kill a Mockingbird. I was in high school 50 years ago.
Yeah.
They're still teaching To Kill a Mockingbird and Lord of the Flies. You think about it. Lord of the Flies is about a bunch of English schoolboys from an English public school, which means private.
Yes. Bunch of twits.
Who get stranded on an island and go native.
Yes.
Should we really be teaching this?
Yeah.
there are no girls in the book. It's just boys. And To Kill a Mockingbird, well, a very, very good novel, tells an important story. That's not a Canadian story.
No. We have Africville. Why isn't somebody trying to get a novel about that?
Well, there are novels about it. It's just that we don't have the...
Where's the billboard?
We don't have the billboarding.
Where's
Oprah?
As
I mentioned earlier...
Our Oprah.
Peter Newman, back when he ran McLean, they had a true cultural nationalist mission. Mm-hmm. Today, the book reviewers, the book review editors in the newspapers, they've got one or two pages to work with. We don't have, McLean's magazine the way we had it. And so there's less space, and there's a lot of pandering. We want people to read our book reviews, so we're not going to review books that are less than likely to be very popular. And that's what happened. We don't. So books that, as you said, books that talk about Africville, mm-hmm, aren't necessarily going to get reviewed or get a lot of attention, except through the award system, or through teachers and colleges and university. Mm-hmm. And the CBC does the best job of anybody by far. And really, I'm in no position to complain about the CBC, but it's the only media outlet right now that really goes to bat for Canadian authors and Canadian publishers. And it does so very, very well. Mm-hmm. But it's the only one.
That's the problem. I think of Farley Mowat. We read him on the air, by the way, recently, his letter to his son, public letter, of course, but about surrendering to U.S. culture and how he was fed up with it, et cetera. And boy, we got a great response. To my mind, there's an appetite in Canada for this. We need some commitment. I hate to use the word political, but it does come up. Why aren't politicians saying we got to have more bookstores, as you say in your essay, to anchor communities, to be a place where people actually meet authors or have them read, you give the example of Quebec. Quebec actually has a policy of you have to have a certain amount of Canadian content on the shelves.
That's correct.
And they also say that if a book is published in Quebec, the libraries and the universities have to buy from them. It can't go down to an American wholesaler.
Well, it's not just they can't go down to the American wholesaler. This is the brilliance of the cultural policy in the province of Quebec. All the institutions, publicly funded institutions, must buy their books from bookstores. Bookstores, in order to be accredited, have to carry X amount of linear space of Canadian books, Canadian published books, Canadian authors. And now it's easier in Quebec because it's Québécois, it's en français. They have been working at building their own cultures. But so instead of a library buying a $24, $25 book for $14 from a library wholesaler, they have to go down the street and buy it from Librairie du Square for $25. So that money stays in the neighborhood.
Yes, and in Canada. Yeah.
And in Canada. And it means that bookstore has a solid chance at survival because they can, do more with that money than if they were getting none of it or half of it. This is not to speak ill of the Canadian wholesalers, but the reality is if bookstores were able to sell, if universities and colleges and libraries were forced to buy from bookstores, we'd have healthier bookstores. Now, I can already hear the librarians saying, yeah, you're cutting our budgets in half. Well, okay, I understand.
Get a bigger budget.
There's not just get a bigger budget. There's spend your budget wisely.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example, and I'll
buy less U.S. junk.
There you go. I'll tell you. If you go on the Toronto Public Library website, you can see what they order, what their holdings are of various books. And there are American authors you've probably never heard of, and there will be hundreds of copies of their books in our library here in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those might even be on the shelves. And then you look up a handful of Canadian publishers or Canadian titles, and they're ordering in 4 and 8 and 6 copies of our books.
Mm-hmm.
And those, there are long lineups of holds, people waiting to get those books. I've raised this matter with the Toronto Public Library on multiple occasions. And this is what I've been told. The Toronto Public Library buys from the large publishers first, and then with what money's left over, we buy your books. So yeah, stop buying American crap and start buying Canadian books. Oh, and by the way, every library has a staff, and the staff does a pretty good job of knowing who their customers are, who the people are that come into the store. Start talking up Canadian authors and Canadian books. When somebody comes in and says, you know, I'm looking for a murder mystery, point them to Ward.
Yes.
Greg Rhino or Maureen Jennings, mm-hmm. instead of Ian Rankin. You know, this isn't hard stuff to do. And it's not like Canadian writers aren't as good. They are. They're every bit as good, and in most cases, they're actually better.
That is a big problem, isn't it? The old problem of cultural hegemony, where everything is judged, measured by what's the U.S. So they say, well, is he a success? Well, I don't know what the Americans think of him yet. Well, the Americans like him. Okay, must be great.
Exactly.
This is kind of pathetic.
We used to say it was the colonized mind or the colonized imagination. But the word colonized has come to mean quite different things now.
Yes.
So
yeah, it's getting a bit, it's overused, you're right.
So we have to be careful. But the truth of the matter is, people should read Canadian books just because shouldn't we want to know what other people in our country think of us, what we think about ourselves, I mean?
Exactly.
And you know, I look at the nonfiction list on the Globe and Mail, and I shake my head, and I wonder, why are people reading this? You know, we published a book on Canadian democracy. Every single outlet that concerns itself with democracy in Canada has praised the book. And it's been a horrible fight to try and get, in particular, Indigo to buy sufficient quantities and display them adequately so that people know there's this terrific book. We're in the midst of an election. You'd think maybe Canada's big chain, Indigo, would say, huh, there's a book called On Canadian Democracy.
Yeah.
Maybe we should put
Is
that by the cash
against?
Registers.
Yeah.
No. If you go to the cash registers, it's Colleen Hoover or somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that doesn't really matter.
You know, I would ask you to tell a story, if you would, about the Gwethelyn Graham and you're being interviewed by somebody who said, Steinbeck is superior to, obviously a superior author. You had published, republished your book. And that's one of the most embarrassing things I ever read. Tell that story, if you would.
That was Harry Forrestal on CBC. CBC morning program. I was being interviewed. We had just reissued Earth in High Heaven by Gwethelyn Graham, which in its time was a giant bestseller in Canada and in the United States. And it was a hugely important book. It was published in 1944, and it was about anti-Semitism in Montreal. And it's a gorgeously written book. During the interview, I said, it's probably the finest example of social realism. And Harry Forrestal said, oh, you can't possibly compare her to John Steinbeck. He won the Pulitzer Prize. She didn't. And then that was it. The clip was over. We were done. And I looked at Harry Forrestal and said, only Americans can win the Pulitzer Prize. She won the Governor General's Literary Award, which John Steinbeck didn't.
Yeah.
He wasn't interested. He was on to the next.
I'm sure he was absolutely puzzled by what you were saying.
I'm not entirely sure he was puzzled. There was this
didn't
horrible
he, by the way, didn't he begin by saying he hadn't read it?
That's right.
That's helpful.
Well, in that case, it wasn't entirely his fault. The file was handed to him at the last minute because the actual interviewer was ill.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have a chance, but he didn't play the cards very well. And the reality is, it showed the built-in chauvinism. The Pulitzer Prize is more important than the Governor General's Literary Award. And what's fascinating is today, if you go and look for a copy of The Stone Diaries by Carol Shields in a bookstore, you pull it off, and it says right on the cover, winner of the Pulitzer Prize. Somewhere in smaller print, it'll say winner of the Governor General's Literary Award. Carol was born in the United States. She was born in Oak Park, Illinois, same place as Ernest Hemingway. And she chose to live her entire life in Canada. She considered herself a Canadian writer. And yet her American publisher in Canada says, this is it.
Yeah.
We're going to promote the Pulitzer Prize over the Governor General's Literary Award.
Yeah, that's why we have to start punching up here. I think, by the way, that I want to ask you this. People used to publish chapbooks, which were sort of a short argumentative but widely read.
Yes.
It seems to me we're in a time we might need that.
Pamphlets are a great idea. That was pamphleteering, and that was really, really big in the 1700s.
Well, in the 20th century, didn't we have little green books, that Kansas publisher? You could carry them in your pocket.
Ah, those I'm not familiar with.
That shows how old I am. But at any rate, I'm sorry, you exposed me. But it just seems to me, the mood here now is combative, frankly. And our politicians, most people are saying, oh, that's good, but let's take the gloves off. And there must be dozens more of writers who'd like to let fly. I mean, I had an old friend, Milton Acorn. I mean, he would fill a book with really strong stuff right now.
Yeah.
So,
well, I believe Milton's books are still in print, and I think...
By the way, they're very contemporary, and that, sure, that was his thesis. He hated Canada bending to American hegemony and culture.
Absolutely, and he was doing it a long, long time ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
And people like to see him. He stand on tables and desks and declaim, and we need a little of that.
We do need a little bit of that, but we also need people going to bookstores and buying Canadian books and finding out what we think about ourselves and what our stories are. And, you know, we have this incredible gift, and we haven't treated it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love, love, love to see. I'd love to get on the bus and see people reading Canadian books. Now, it happens. You know, there was a moment several years ago when CTV had done an adaptation for television of Lives of the Saints. And one morning I got on the streetcar and I looked down and I saw four people reading Lives of the Saints.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that's how it works.
Exactly.
And, you know, every now and then you'll see people reading Giller-winning books.
Mm-hmm.
The Governor General's Literary Award, unfortunately, doesn't do very good at marketing its winners. It should.
That's a big problem.
Those are hugely important awards, and always good books win it.
Yeah. Well, let me, Mark Cote, let me, and by the way, Cormorant Publishing, really great publishers, and publishes many Quebec authors' translation, which
yep.
Canadians should be reading because it's a distant, strange country that nobody here knows anything about. But Mark, your family dates back to 1632 Montreal. Congratulations.
Not Montreal, Île d'Orléans, outside of Quebec City. That's my father's family.
Ah,
well. My mother's family dates back to 1919.
Well, I guess.
They got off the boat from Exeter there.
I take my hat off to you for anybody could say 1600s anything. Now, I want to, lastly here, I just want to make sure we ask this. Why, clearly, there are people feel challenged and they want to read material which will strengthen them and strengthen our culture. So why are people shy, or maybe I'll put it another way, should we not be subsidizing culture the same way we do oil, gas, and batteries?
Well, Phil. Boy, did you ever kick a hornet's nest.
Yeah, I'll get out of here quick. Yeah.
If the Canadian government funded book publishers to the extent they fund the oil and gas industry, we would not have a problem.
The world would say, hey, did you see that Canadian author? Did you read that book? That's what they would say.
Canadians would be reading Canadian books because would really be able to build something wonderful.
Yes. But and the rest of the world would be glad to see it. They say, oh, boy, somebody in North America has got a brain.
Yeah. Some people do. And you know, our authors, when they're properly published and properly promoted, they don't just win prizes here. They do win prizes abroad where they're eligible for prizes, notably the Booker Prize in England. But they're also read and studied elsewhere, and people are fascinated because suddenly there's this sense, oh, there are other voices in Canada, other voices from a place called Canada,
mm-hmm.
and they're writing about a different way of living, a different way of people living together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing that, you know, Canada has this to offer, and I'm not saying we're perfect because God knows we're not, but... I was at a lecture recently, and Nigel Bigger was talking, and he said, when two cultures meet, there are three options. Culture A annihilates culture B, culture B annihilates culture C, or there's a kind of apartheid where they agree to live together but separately.
Mm-hmm.
And after he talked, I went up to him and I said, what about multiculturalism? What about those states where they say, we're not going to annihilate, we're not going to dominate, we're not going to live in separate compartments, we're going to live side by side? And he looked up and he said, oh, Canada. Oh, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Oh, the Ottomans. And I said, yeah, these are empires that did not, you know, I mean, obviously, if you were part of the Austrian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and you wanted to be part of the, you know, the ruling party, you spoke German. But you weren't relegated to a secondary life, a second status life, if you held on to your native language.
Mm.
And in Canada, we've struggled with this, but we've done a halfway good job of saying, yeah, you can speak French here. Yeah, you know what? You come to Canada, you have to learn English or French because those are the official languages, unless you want to learn, you mm-hmm. know, Ojibwe or Anishinaabe. But we've striven for the last few years to try and make this country one where we all get along and where the majority does not trample the minority.
Yes.
That's a lesson I think we can teach to the entire world.
Absolutely.
And it's vested in our literature. It's there.
We should return to the Republic of Letters.
Republic of Letters, I like that.
It used to be a pretty handy phrase. People would believe in it so they could read authors from all over the world, but start with Canada.
Yes.
Mark Côté, Cormorant Publishing. We're very fortunate to be talking to you, Mark, and I hope we can get back to you because there's also the big stuff going on about tariffs, and we'd like to talk to you about that. And so maybe in the future we could do it.
Absolutely, Phil. Anytime.
Okay. Thank you, Mark Côté.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to have a little bit of music, and then we're going to talk to David Jacobs.